Hello, and thanks for joining the Walt Weekly Podcast, the Friday Live. My name is Walter Latham. I'm your host. I'm joined by Michelle Sweeney McCombs. And today, folks, we have a fantastic guest. If you're a small business entrepreneur, or you're looking to do a startup, we have the right guest on the phone. He's an asset when it comes to finance. And we want to leverage his knowledge the best we can. All right. With that said, some of the topics that we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about the business environment in COVID, supply chain disruptions, inflation, and the country's political divide. And with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle Sweeney McCombs, who's going to introduce our esteemed guest. And let's get down to some business.
All right. Thank you, Walter. And thank you, everyone. Good evening and welcome to the Walt Weekly Friday Live. Thank you to our live audience for joining us. Please follow the Walt Weekly and share this podcast by clicking the share button below. The Walt Weekly Friday Live is brought to you by Michelle Sweeney Hair and Skincare. Our intro and outro music is provided by Uncle Nephew. Today's topic, small business and entrepreneurship with Ray McGuire. Joining us this week, our weekly panel members, Christopher Sweeney out of New Jersey, retired New York City sanitation worker and CEO of Johnny Roof's Smokehouse. Our next panel member is Honorable Gene Edwards, male district leader out of the 79th District in the Bronx, New York. Today's guest, Raymond J. McGuire, which we will call him lovingly by Ray, was born in Dayton, Ohio. Raised by his mother and grandparents through scholarships, he attended the Hotchkiss School in Lakeville, Connecticut. In 1979, he graduated with a BA from Harvard College. In 1980, Mr. McGuire attended the University of Nice in France on a Rotary Fellowship. In 1984, he received an MBA from Harvard Business School and a Juris Doctor from Harvard Law School. He's the father of three. He's an American businessman, former executive at Citigroup, and former 2021 Democratic New York City candidate for mayor. Back to you, Walter, and welcome, Mr. McGuire, to the Walt Weekly.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here with Walt Weekly. What's up?
What's up?
Yes, thank you.
All right.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for joining us. I mean, your success, you're a legend in your own time. That's the only thing I can say right now. You're a legend in your own time. And you are an asset to the community. And we admire, and I speak on behalf of all of the folks here at the Walt Weekly, that we are very proud of your accomplishments. All right. You are vice chair at Citigroup, which I believe is just one to two steps down from CEO. All right. And you represented us well. And the questions that we're going to have, it's going to go, you know, we're going to start with small business and it's going to be a somewhat broad range, but we're going to target the small business entrepreneurs and things of that nature. And hopefully our listeners will be able to gain something from that. I know they will. All right. This show is for them. Okay. All right. So let's start with the first question that I have for you. All right. And it's going to be in a small business category. All right. What is your assessment of the state of Black businesses locally, regionally, and nationally?
So, first of all, let me say to Michelle and Walt, thank you all for having me. I'm honored to be here. You know, for me, people ask me, how did I got here? And I say, it is based on the following prayer, because this has been a walk of faith for me, preparation. You got to be prepared. Performance, when you get the opportunity, you got to perform. And then, you know, growing up in the neighborhood, always got a healthy sense of paranoia. So it is prayer, preparation, performance, and paranoia. With respect to the state of Black and brown businesses locally, regionally, and nationally, you know, we're still not where we need to be. If you look at the median wealth of Black folks in this country, and you start from 1989 until, you know, 2019 or so, you can see that the numbers for Black folk has not increased materially. With white folks, it has increased pretty significantly. the black to white wealth is there probably 10 times more wealth in the white community than there is the black community. And if you look at percentage of the population in let's say the second half of last year, white households had, I don't know, 60% of the population, yet they had 84%+ of the total wealth. Black folks had 4% of the wealth and were 13% of the population. And when it comes to the businesses, look at where those businesses are. Those businesses are primarily in the kind of the day-to-day hospitality area, the kind of what I'd say you can't work from home businesses. And so the disparity is pretty broad. And unless there is some intervention, my sense is that disparity will continue.
Okay. And what do you think?
That is locally, regionally, and nationally. Nationally is simply an aggregation of what we see taking place regionally and locally. And most of what I'm describing to you exists in the geographies around the country. New York is just a example of that, a proxy, as we say, for what's taking place in the business community.
Okay. What do you think we can do to accelerate the growth in this sector? You know, what remedies did you put in place based on your experience and expertise?
There are a number of remedies. It all comes down to capital and the availability of capital. For one, we tend to be in the areas that have the lower wages. So as you think about where it is that we ought to focus in investing, we ought to focus in investing with capital on areas that have the higher growth. And I fully appreciate that we need to be in the areas that serve the public, but we need also to be in the areas that serve the future.
I was thinking that, historically, it's virtually impossible for business to have access to capital, which you mentioned. That is a key driver. I mean, without funding, you can't do anything. All right. Now, since you were the head of investment banking for a major bank, and you're used to, funding and under that umbrella of investment banking, y'all guys do trillions of dollars worth of business a year. You do mergers and acquisitions. So based on your knowledge of capital, what would you do to correct or make it easier for black businesses to access capital? Where do you think that capital is going to come from? I know what you're saying, what sectors we should be in the future and this and that. Is that what else would you add to that in terms of access to capital?
It's a great question. And the big divide here is access to capital. There are a couple of other divides, but I would focus on the access to capital. And the access to capital needs to come at a local level. And that means you have the what they call CDFI, which is the community development financial institutions. Uh-huh. You have business improvement districts, the BIDs, you have chambers of commerce. And then you have entities out there like Acción, who do microloans. And you'll see them in many of the businesses of many of the neighborhoods that don't have access to capital. So a company like Acción, whose average loan is somewhere in the $7,000 range the interest rates on them are pretty high, but many people pay those loans back. And they're the ones that help start the businesses. The other are the local financial institutions, the CDFIs, that are supposed to be there to access, to grant the capital to the black and brown entrepreneurs. The other is where we need to focus, and that is on the community banks and making certain that those community banks have a couple of things. One, we need to make sure that those community banks have the capital. The other thing that so they can lend out the money. The other thing that is necessary is for those banks to have the technology so that they can help people get the loan, so they can vet who the people are who are borrowing. And then they can help people get the loans. And okay. Part of this is the other factor to this, Walt, is are the business plans. Many of us have great ideas, but we don't have a way to communicate those ideas. So how do we go about putting a plan together that when you do go to the bank and or one of these other lending institutions, that you have a plan in place that they can look to say, okay, this is a credible plan. It's not just an idea in somebody's head, but it's an idea that they've thought about. They put it on paper, and it's an attractive idea. None of these businesses in the white community, get funded without some kind of business plan.
Okay. I was thinking that, and maybe it's just a misconception on my part, is that, you have many migrants that would come here, let's say Indian, Pakistani, and they struggle to get here. Then all of a sudden they have a magazine shop, they have a liquor store. Where's that funding? And because you can look at things on a macro level, on a global level, and make a comparison to, the black community versus, let's say, the Pakistani that comes here, or the Korean and opens up a store. Is that money coming from, when I say micro, I'm talking about internally, or do they just have just better access to capital than we do?
It is coming both ways. Remember, many of those organizations come together as cooperatives. They come together and pool their resources. And with the pool, and you look at a number of instances of who is most likely to control, for example, the bodegas, right? Is there a group of owners? And what you'll find is flower shops, bodegas, you will find this is part of a community. So people come in and pool their resources, and they're able to pool enough resources and get access to some of those micro loans so they can, get up and start their businesses.
That's a key. That's a missing ingredient. I mean, that's a very powerful thing if we could do that.
It's powerful. Very powerful. The other thing that happens here is that the infrastructure, you got to be able to meet payroll. And so part of some of the stuff in the technology comes in, you got to be able to figure out who's on your payroll, and whether or not that payroll is automated, right? Part of this, when we got to COVID and we got to people being able to access the PPE, part of people couldn't access it because they didn't have the right books in place to be able to do that. They couldn't afford the infrastructure. A lot of this is, many of these things are off the books, for one. For two, the books are held in paper on a clipboard. And so when you try to translate that into getting funds to be able to start a business, people are going to be really reluctant if they can't somehow figure out what your model is and how you intend to make business. What's your plan? Have you thought about it? Give me a planning scenario. That means that one of the things we have to do in the community is to give people access to training so they understand how to pull a business plan together. So if you're going to start a business and you want somebody to lend you $1,000, you're going to have to be able to demonstrate that you can pay them back based on how much revenue you think you can generate. You're going to sell this amount of widgets doing this, and Y amount of widgets doing this, and this is the price that you're going to have to charge in order to pay that $1,000 back over time.
Okay, Ray.
One second. Yeah. Michelle, I'm sorry. That's a senior moment, Ray. Okay. That's what I refer to him as.
But I was on mute. That's okay. We all have. So if my phone goes out, that means I get to senior
Moment. Yeah. I think we're close there, Ray. But
I would think, Walter, I would think some of that music you listened to earlier you got to bring a little more local, man.
That's that nodding music.
You nodded off of that music, Walter. What's going on, man?
Man, we're gonna fix that though.
I'm in charge of that, Ray. Don't worry about it.
Okay, you take care of it, brother.
That's it.
For sure. Take care of him.
As I was going to mention, Michelle, she also moderates the chat room, and this is such an important topic. And we have business people in the house, And is there, Michelle, are there any questions so far in terms of small businesses that that we have?
No questions
that Ray can address?
No questions in the chat room, but, you know, for myself and also Chris as entrepreneurs, you know, with COVID, what advice can you give small businesses right now? Because business it's a struggle for black owned businesses at the moment. You know, a lot I have a beauty salon. I work independently and through independent contracting. It's really tough because of COVID, you know, we got hit hard with this line of business, my line of business. So what advice can you give small black owned businesses in reference to marketing ourselves better?
You know, that's a key question, especially during COVID, and especially given the amount of businesses that were black-owned businesses that got hit hard, like salons and barbershops and all. And I know many of these are individual proprietorships, so even though they are that, the owner of the entire space has got to have the capital to withstand the storm. And one of the things that I experienced during at least the first wave of the crisis is we didn't have enough of the infrastructure in place to go and apply for the funds that were available to help out small businesses. And the businesses that were able to access the PPE early on, those businesses had systems in place. They had, you know, they had access to technology so that when they applied for the loans, they were able to access the loans and survive that round of COVID. Without that, then you got to go to the local banks. But even there, the paperwork has got to be in a strong enough position for the local banks to be able to take the risk, right? Because what people are, you have banks who look at this two ways. They look at it. Some banks look at it and they make loans not to lose money, and some banks make loans to earn money. And so you got to figure out how you're presenting yourself to a bank or any kind of lender, because the risk profile of some of these small businesses is so high that what the banks are afraid of is, and they have something called loan loss reserves, which means that if the banks have extended credit to risky borrowers, then they have to increase the reserves on their books to absorb the losses that they will realize if those risky borrowers can't pay. That has an impact on those banks and their ability to continue to lend.
Right. I know a lot of people were doing the PPEs, and then they, you know, there was a lot of confusion with PPEs and then borrowing money that you didn't have to pay for. It was a lot of confusion, and they didn't have anyone out there helping people, directing them in the right way. But thank you for your answer, Ray. Okay, Chris.
I was just
It's the PPEs were just not, it was not well explained, and there was no way to explain it. I remember holding several Zoom calls before the CARES Act, and getting people primed to do this. And this goes away from businesses like yours, Michelle, to the faith-based community,
right,
to the other, you know, other kind of small businesses. We didn't have enough tutorials in place, and we didn't extend our network. We didn't have the relationships so that when people went to access the support, that they had the right training to do that. That did not exist in large part. And then what happens, you get the guys who, you know, kind of the hustlers out there who say, Michelle, listen, I'll do this for you. You break me off, you know, a grand or two grand.
Right.
And you do that, and then, you know, you don't get anything. So we're always susceptible to that, right?
Right. You get a loss. That's what you get.
You get a loss. Like, what happened? And then it kind of disappear, mm-hmm. Right?
Right. That's right. Okay.
No, I was really going to piggyback on what he was just saying. It's like there's a need for, you know how, you know, I'm in the hospitality business. I wanted to start a food truck. I recently retired, so I'm kind of in a little different lane than other people are because I have something to fall back on as far as a pension. and I could take a few more chances than other people do. But all, you know, what's needed out there is, like, you know, when you have a small company in tech, and say you need a graphic artist, you could always, you know, network and find the graphic artist. Where are the people that are out there that are helping you build a portfolio or build a business plan? We don't have enough people like that out there to help small businesses, to help people who have talents, because you could have great talents. You could be the best chef in the world, but if you don't have great sense of business, you're never going to make it. And I feel like there's a need out there for people to help people form businesses or build them, structure them. And that's a lane that we could push people in who are in the business world, such as yourself, who can, you know, help people mold their, shape their businesses and get them started. It could be like a Facebook type of thing. It's something I think is a great idea. You know, I don't have the ability to do it because that's not my lane, but I would certainly join a group like that if there's something out there that exists in that lane.
So did you say was there a question?
Yes, there was an audience question also, piggyback off of what Chris said. They're asking, UNM70 is asking, where do they go to get help with a business plan and much needed help in that?
You know, Michelle, it is a great question, which is one of the questions when I was in the arena running for mayor that I identified that I would do. And that is, in most communities, we have these business improvement districts, the BIDs, and we also have chambers of commerce, and we also have faith-based centers. And so, and we also have, although they may be closed now, and we have libraries. So one of the things in one of those five places, one of the things that I envision us doing was to put together classes for entrepreneurs at different hours, because I know businesses have to run, so that we would come in and teach people how to put together business plans, what business plans look like, for one, how to put together business plans, and also teach people technology skills. How do you do this? How do you kind of work through a spreadsheet? And how do you think about, you know, taking on debt, how much the cost of debt should look like, who are the people who can fund the debt, what are the, you know, the 10 or probably 5 likely available sources for you to go to fund the debt. So I thought that if I could get 5 different venues, safe places that we could go to, a chamber of commerce or a church, or if they're open, a community center, or one of the branches of the New York Public Library. If we could get the experts in and teach courses, entry level, how do you build a business plan? Entry level, how do you work the computer? And how do you fill out different forms? And what do you need? And what kind of bookkeeping for those businesses that have been up and running for a while, like yours, Michelle? What kind of infrastructure do you need to have, what kind of bookkeeping do you need to have to make certain that your business is as tight as it can be, and that when opportunities come along for you to access capital,
right,
that you have the systems in place, including the back office. There's one of the great leaders in Harlem, Walter Edwards, who has a idea where he would put the back room, the back office stuff, make it available to small businesses, so that they could, you know, maybe pay a small fee to the back office providers, and that becomes their bookkeeping. It becomes a whole bunch of things. And so that would be a resource for the small businesses.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Any further questions? Or did that answer the question for the person that brought it up?
Yes, it answered my question and our audience questions, and our regular audience member, Diamandy, also put some information in the chat room for us as well. Thank you, Diamandy. Okay, we can go on to the next.
All right, good. Ray, what do you think about, you know, the impact of digital banking, all right, on small businesses and on the community at, you know, in general? Because a lot of people don't have the regular checking account and this and that. But when it comes to small business, you're gonna need a traditional account. And then with digital banking, like fintech, you got all these other type methods of making payments. And you can throw Bitcoin in there too. I mean, what do you think the impact on the community would be?
You know, that's a great question. If I were to take one of the, for example, if I were to take Carver Savings Bank, which is the oldest probably chartered bank in the country, if I were to take that and advertise Carver and make Carver available digitally and give you the back office support so that if you wanted to get a loan, you could sit at home and or at one of these places that I described on your or someone else's computer, to the extent that people don't have computers, and I fully appreciate that, and fill out a form online. And most of these banks require what is known as a wet signature, which means you actually have to sign the document.
Right.
We've now advanced so that you can do some of this digitally. But because there's been so much abuse of the system, people are a little reluctant about that. But to the extent that we could give security in digital banking, that gives us more access to it. And I like digital banking because of the access that it gives to the people who are unbanked today, but who have great ideas. I like that better than I do the payday lenders, as an example, because they're going to charge you rates that you may never pay that back. So I like the traditional model of banking. I want the traditional model to have a digital offering that is secure so that you can do a lot of the paperwork that's necessary to do. You can do it in a more secure and safe space.
Okay.
You know what? I want to ask in reference to, now, you know, you have your apps, you have your Cash App, you have Venmo and the other ones. As of February, I believe it is, they're going to start charging, we have to report this money. You know, a lot of parents during COVID and families weren't able to help each other. That was our way of sending money to each other to help each other. Parents are sending money to their kids for college, et cetera. They're going to start reporting. We have to start reporting that money after, what is it, $600 or something like that? So whoever's getting this money, if it goes over that, you have to report it to the IRS. What do you think about that?
Well, remember, part of what they're doing this for is because people kind of game the system, right?
Right.
They're doing this. They're doing this so that people don't take care of the people who are trying to do this legitimately. You maybe wouldn't be surprised, but the number of people out there who are trying to game the system, the result of which is those people trying to do good get gamed by those people who, you know, this is what they do.
Right.
So I wasn't aware of the $600, but I could certainly see them implementing that so that they can try to reduce the amount of abuse that takes place in the system.
Right, right. Yeah, because with Cash App, you could transfer up to $3,000. So I guess they have a point there, but
you don't know who's transferring the money for what reason, right?
Right. It could be money laundering. It could be money laundering.
It could be whatever it is. People are very scared, and people hijack somebody's account. They take money out of the account. People don't know where the money went. You know, you don't have a lot of security there.
That's true.
Right? Who's going back that? You put money in a bank, you're secured up to a certain point. FDIC security, FDIC back. Some of these others don't have.
Right. Yeah, okay. I see your point. People were interested in that as well.
Thank you. Have a question, Chris?
Yeah, I want to stay. It's a little off topic, but same thing in the tech space. How do you feel about companies like Affirm and SoFi and companies like that who are, it's almost like, they're kind of getting rid of the credit card companies, you know.
Yes, yes.
In terms of, it's almost like layaway.
Afterpay, yes.
Yeah, you could pay over time, and if you pay it a certain amount of time, there's no interest on the money. If you pay within 6 months, you pay it off. There's no interest accrued. How do you feel about companies like Affirm and SoFi?
you know, rather than referencing Affirming SoFi, just think about this. When I was growing up, we did layaway. I think we got away from layaway.
Yeah,
somehow,
I remember that. You know. Yeah.
But Easter, my mom would go, you know, a couple months before Easter and then, you know, put it on layaway as she could get the money to pay for it. So layaway is not a new concept. It kind of went quiet for a while. Now it's back. And to the extent that people get access to layaway digitally, I'm okay with that. You got no interest. Okay. It just allows you. You know, American Express has that, right?
Yes, I
mean, many of these companies now. Many of these companies are now allowing you to do that, no interest, because they need to generate. They need to generate that kind of volume. There's a fee in there. Somewhere you're going to pay a fee because this is not for free. But if you understand how this thing works and you can keep it safe, and it allows you to go and buy, that's going to facilitate. It's going to make it easier for them to bring you on as a customer longer term. You're going to feel loyal. And, you know, people don't necessarily switch out of their banking relationships, right? That's kind of like one of the last things you do. Now, that assumes also that you got a banking relationship, which is not an always accurate assumption. Now, the other thing that allows to occur, which is really important for a small business, really important, it is allows you to create a payment track record. And the more you have consistency in your payment, the better your credit, the better your FICO score is going to be. The more available capital is going to be.
All right. Makes sense.
One more quick thing. How do you feel about One United? I'm a member of One United. I'm trying to bank Black as well. I also use a couple of other banks, but I'm trying to move in the direction of banking Black. And you know, right now I tried to get a small loan, business loan from One United, but I wasn't able to secure that. I had to come back with some more documents, more information. I think it's a little, I was able to get it with a more established bank. Well, not say a more established bank, but, you know, one of the other banks, they were able to give it to me. But I really want to work with One United. So I'm trying to stay with them and get in that lane where we keep the money in our communities.
So that's what we need to do with the One United and the Carvers and the rest. Although, let me be clear about this. There are only at most 18, I'm going to say at most 20 Black banks left in the country. I want to be clear about that. That's number one. Number two, we need to make sure that they have enough capital to invest in the technology and enough capital to take some risk. In your instance, if you went to a larger institution and have the same paperwork, that means that they have systems in place that can identify your credit worthiness better than some other institution that doesn't have the same technology.
That's what I took from it. Thank you.
But I do have a question. I was kind of shocked. You said there's only 20 Black banks in the country. I mean, why is that? Is that through acquisitions or?
No, they just didn't have enough capital.
Capitalized.
They weren't capitalized. Okay. Didn't have the capital. See, what happens is you can't lend beyond a certain level of capital, right?
Right.
Because your
reserves.
Your capital's got to be able to absorb your losses. So if you can't lend, and a lot of this is about lending, how do banks get paid? Banks get paid by delivering services, right?
Correct.
There's a fee on it. If they don't have the capital to lend, just think about what do they do? They're just sitting there. Why are you going to go in the bank? Pull your money out?
Okay.
Just think about that. That's how you have to think about it.
Yeah, I was just surprised it was only 20. I was thinking that there was many, many more than that.
They've all had, you know, the numbers are not good.
Okay.
They're not good.
Okay, you wouldn't blame that on the Great Recession when you know all the
banks. The Great Recession had a lot to do with it, right?
Okay.
There are factors out there that in the Great Recession being one, but there are factors out there that have resulted in a limited number of Black-owned banks.
Okay, so there's room for growth in that sector. There's room for growth.
I think there's huge growth.
Yeah, there's huge growth potential there. Okay. All right. So Okay, Ray, I heard you mention that we just don't want the crumbs, we just don't want the cake, we want the bakery. Could you elaborate a little bit on that? Because that
yeah,
caught my
eye. You know why I said that?
Yeah.
I said that because I referenced Martin Luther King Jr. back at the height of where we were as Black people, who said, "What good does it do me if I earn the right to sit at the lunch counter but cannot afford a hamburger?"
Yeah.
And then I said that if I look at the amount of money that was spent by New York City during COVID, which was $22+ billion spent, $1.9 billion of that went to MWBEs. Wow. And if I look at that, that's 1.9, 80%, 8 out of 10 MWBEs got zero. And so I said what Black folk had been given were the crumbs, and I wasn't interested in the crumbs. Matter of fact, I wasn't interested in the cake. I wanted us to own the bakeries.
Right.
There you go.
And it has to be the focus in order for us to bridge this wealth gap that that we own the bakeries. That has to be the aspiration.
Okay. Okay. Now, I want to turn, and a lot of this further questions that I have maybe duplicate in the first category when we talked about Black businesses. But let's talk a little bit about entrepreneurship. And I think you touched a lot on that already. But I do want the audience to know that the New York City Small Business Services, all right, they did a survey, and they said the New York City community makes up the Black community within New York City makes up 22% of the population, 1.9 million. Just 3.5% of New York City businesses are owned by Black entrepreneurs. And there's a tremendous potential for more Black-owned businesses to start and grow. So what would you tell, you know, us about aspiring entrepreneurs? What are some of the key criteria that you would look for in an entrepreneur?
I need a plan. Well, first of all, I need a vision. I need a vision.
Okay.
That's number one. Number two, I need a plan. And that nobody's going to give you money without a plan.
Absolutely.
Because everybody's got a great idea. Everybody's got, so unless you can communicate that plan to an investor, and this is no different between Black and white, unless you communicate a plan to an investor, you will not get the capital. And what happens, you got to have that plan so well rehearsed going in. We recognize that that there's going to be reluctance because the risk profile is high for any small business starting, any entrepreneur. Most of them fail. And so in order to overcome that, we're going to have to make certain that your documents are tight because people, you know, they're putting money to risk.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
All right.
And furthermore, and I don't say this, I say this because what was described earlier, which is how we go about training ourselves and giving ourselves the opportunity to understand what's required. Remember, we, for the most part, don't have the networks that the white entrepreneurs have. And that network is somebody who we know who right. started a business, who you can go over to the house and sit down, or go to Starbucks and sit down and look at a screen, and they can walk you through their business plan.
Right. So okay. I have a question, you know, in reference, since you mentioned, you know, the clear people. The difference is with them is that they have more leeway because they're white. You know, I came from corporate America and I used to work at Citibank and I had to deal with, you know, I went from department to department to department, just transferring, learning different areas, trying to grow. And it was still like a brick over my head. Like I could not grow because it was a lot of discrimination. So there's discrimination in small business industry as well. White people are more prone to get the loans that they need, not just because they have their paperwork, but they're considered less of a risk than Black people. So do you I find that there's a lot of discrimination in small business. Just like my brother was saying earlier, Christopher was saying that, you know, a lot of these people come to these countries in the community, they can open up a store, open up whatever, and they're not even here that long. But it takes us longer to get it. Much it's more difficult for us to open up a business. Why is that? I think discrimination has.
I don't disagree with you. Let's stipulate that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that. I've been in the money game for almost four decades. I'm under no illusion about how hard it is. And what I have said in a couple of forums is when people start out this game, and I'm going to be somewhat colloquial here, but when you start the game off, Black man is down 10 points, Black woman down 15. I get that. There are no illusions about that. I want to be clear about that. We should not be mistaken about that. So understanding that, what does it take us to do? What do we need to do in order to, one, bridge, eliminate that deficit that we started off with, and then get beyond that?
Right.
I'm accepting everything that you're saying. I'm not pushing back on anything. Matter of fact, I'm going deeper than you did on this.
Right.
Because that's the reality. So, okay, now I got they coming at me. It's like, let me give you a sports analogy. Michael Jordan, there was no mystery whatsoever in the last 30 to 45 seconds of the game when the Bulls are down, who's going to get the ball. We knew that.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Everybody on the planet knew what was going to happen. He was going to take the shot, or he's going to pass it out to Paxton or Kerr. Either one of those, that everybody, there was no mystery.
Right.
I'm going into this thing, ain't got no mystery.
Right. Yeah. But what else is a mystery?
With Ray, but the problem with us too is we suffer from their ice is colder.
Oh, we have, right?
Right.
I know that.
Right.
White man ice is colder. Yeah. I get that. I'm saying yes.
No, I'm just telling my sister that. Like, we have to support our businesses. We,
right.
You know, our coffee's just as good as Starbucks. We just got to bring ourselves into those coffee shops and buy it. We got to patronize each other. We got to purchase.
And
from
we
each
also
other.
Have to yes. recognize that we are worth the same amount as Starbucks. Don't come into my shop and ask me, oh, well, can I get a discount? You're not going to go to Starbucks or the next salon down the block and ask for a discount, you know? And because of COVID, you know, yesterday's price is not today's price. And it's still cheap. So why do we in our community knock our prices down? Like it's like I feel like I have to beg for money when I have my prices. Like I'm not worthy of it. You know, that's another problem with small businesses.
Yeah. Michelle,
we have to learn
Michelle.
To treat each other right.
Yeah, Chris, right. Excuse me.
Wait,
yeah,
no,
Michelle,
no.
I am not going. This don't take this the wrong way, okay? But you know, when I go out and let's say play golf and playing my green fees and this and that, hey, I'm looking for a senior discount. Okay, I'm looking for a discount anywhere I can get it. All right?
Well, that's different. I'm
on a discount.
A different thing. You have senior discounts. I do senior discounts too. But if it's a regular person and I have my price for whatever services they're getting, and I have that price, they look at me cross-eyed. I'm like, come on, you know.
Yeah, you got it on the wall too.
You
I'll
know,
post it up.
And
right.
it's
okay,
posted
okay, I got
up.
You.
Like,
I got you.
Yeah, respect my business. That's all I'm saying.
I hear you.
Because we don't question white people. We're going to pay their prices.
Well, I do. Yeah.
Well, look, you know, you're not in the city, so we can't include that. You live in the suburbs, dude.
You make an exception for me. Okay. All right. Okay, cool. But anyway,
okay,
look.
Thank you.
Well,
yeah.
I got a question for Ray, and it's in regards to his run for mayor.
But I don't want to go there yet, Chris. I got that on the list.
Okay.
All right. I want to engage Gene in that conversation when you have it. Mm-hmm. All right. Ray, I want to take a look at the current economic climate. All right. From your viewpoint. All right. You got a big purview. Okay. I'm hearing some background noise. Anyway. All right. What does the current environment look like with COVID? And we got the Omicron and this and that. You know, what is in general, what does the current business climate look like? You know, the market is very volatile. What's your outlook?
Let's say about next year. Yeah, I'm not certain why this phone is going off. So I apologize to you.
That's okay.
Somebody said that's a slot machine. You getting that money.
Yeah, he probably played. Yeah. Caesars. Caesars. Yeah, go ahead.
Are y'all doing slot? Y'all forgot. Y'all to box them or play them straight?
Box. Play them straight, man.
Box and straight.
I wouldn't know. I'm not a gambler.
I y'all do don't know nothing about that. Y'all don't know nothing about that, huh?
I get boxing straight, buddy.
I heard it. I heard the bolita in there.
Okay. Come on now.
That's all right.
No, but I want to get back. I do want to get back.
All right. Let me tell you something. My view about the business community, the businesses today in COVID, it's hard out here. It is hard. There's nothing easy about this. It's like I was the question about race. Yeah, but there are two existential crises that we're dealing with in the country and in the world. The two are climate and the wealth gap. Right. In the wealth gap, I'm looking at where the stock market was in March of 2020. So I'm going to separate the answer out on the following. Along the following two. One is the stock market and one is what's taking place on the streets.
Okay.
March of 2020, between March of 2020 or April, March when we, January, February, March or so, let's say March is when we began to shut down with COVID. March of 2020 and the end of this week, the U.S. stock market was reaching historic highs. Okay. The impact of COVID in the community is bringing food security to lows that we haven't seen in decades. Small businesses are suffering mightily. They need support. And for the consumer, there are checks being mailed out to the consumer, which will help short term. It's like a sugar rush. But longer term, we need to make sure that people get educated. So we need to invest more. We cannot cut our way out of this crisis. The only way out of this is to grow. And we need to give the small businesses the capital to survive. And where they're not going to survive, we need to give them capital to reinvent themselves, start new businesses, and to grow. The only way out of this is to grow. The only way for our community out of this is to grow, to get the dollars into the communities, to get the capital in. There is no social justice without economic justice. It ain't going to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So with Biden's Build Back Better bill and a recently passed infrastructure bill, you agree with those then? They're not inflation. My concern is inflation. All right.
So inflation is less. So Build Back Better infrastructure, I'm in favor because we need to repair, you know, the Bronx. When it comes to climate, I'm looking at one of the highest incidents of asthma that exists anywhere in the country happens in the Bronx because of, you know, all the thoroughfares that convene there. That to me is climate, right? We got to address that. So I would say if you can build the gateway so that you have another way to access and alleviate some of the traffic that's in the Bronx, or you do something with the BQE that will have impact on those communities, then we should do that. And the Build Back Better should begin to address that. Build Back Better should be able to for those people regionally and around the country who drive to work. You know, you hit a pothole, you got to repair a tire. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, you're right.
So, you know, people, they're one or two paychecks away from being able to say, I need help. You know, if you repair that stuff, then long term, it'll be helpful. Now, the other thing when it comes to the economics is if we have the small black-owned businesses, black and brown owned businesses that participate in jobs and Build Back Better, that helps us all. So that gets the small businesses that are MWBE businesses and investing in those businesses so they can participate in the billions and trillions of dollars that are coming in Build Back Better.
All right. So you don't believe that the Fed should take any type of action. I did hear they were thinking about increasing the interest rates in the first quarter of next year, but you don't see that as an issue.
I don't know. Well, the question is whether or not it's temporary or not. So what has happened here given all the money that is out there, you got it. You got it. You got a problem with the following. If you go to, you go to the salon, right? And it is the only salon around. And there used to be 10 people in the salon, and now they're 5. And the only way for that salon to survive is to raise the prices. Correct. You got to pay. That's called inflation, right?
Right.
You got, and so the supply chain logistics, given where we are there, given the amount of money that's out there, if you want to go in that salon, in order for that salon to survive, it's got to pay the prices. And if you want to get your nails fixed and your hair done, you have to pay the prices. That's inflation.
Right.
Right, because exactly. The prices that the salon has to pay for the hair supplies and the nail supplies has just gone up.
Right. Overhead went up.
So. Overhead went up. And you know
you
what?
Pass it on.
You got to pass it on. So that's inflation. Now, when the supply chain gets better, do the prices go down? Maybe, which is at one point the Fed thought that it was going to be more temporary than not. The problem is that the supply chain challenges are going to last longer than what was anticipated. So prices are going up, so which is where inflation comes in. But if you have people in the communities who are not working anyway, the problem just gets worse, right?
Right.
And now let me give you the one that is the worst. If you got people in the community who are not educated, who can't read or write, who cannot participate in the economy, mainstream, inflation or no inflation, and the only thing they got to work on is the pharmaceutical industry, the street pharmaceutical industry, you can see what's being played out today in the neighborhoods every single day.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
You know what?
I also think that the stock market is not a true barometer of where we are as people. Like, most people don't play the stock market.
That's exactly, you know, right. That's why I split it out. You're exactly right. I split it out just for that reason. The folk I'm talking about who, you know, are food insecure are not playing the stock market, right?
Right.
They're not investing in the stock market. Most folk ain't got no capital gains tax that they can reinvest or delay reinvesting through, you know, these new programs they got out there. The reality is that the situation right now is we're in a hard place. I'm just keeping it real.
You know, one of the questions that I had was, you know, what is your opinion on the investments in equity in the bond markets at this time? And I think you just answered that. So I think I can cross that off the list.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I do believe now, and I have no data to support this belief, it's observation and training on elasticity of demand. You know, the more demand you have, the higher the prices go. And the less demand, the lower the prices go, right?
Yeah, depending upon where supply is, yes.
Right. Right. Now, this supply chain disruption that we're having, do you think that is for lack of a better term, do you think it's man-made? Is it some type of BS or, you know, so that they can make more money?
No, it's real. No, man, it's real. Remember, okay. A large part of many of the goods that we use are made outside of the country. So let me give an example. You go try to buy a new car. It's not the dealers don't want to sell you a new car. They ain't got no new cars. Ain't no cars on the lot. They can't get the chips to make the electronics in the cars work. That's real.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Hard to get that a car
ain't,
right
that
now.
Ain't nobody. That ain't, there's people just straight up. They there's no chips. The cars don't run. And so the chip manufacturers, remember, people were not working. So if you don't work, if just think about that. All the backlog of things that were not getting made because people weren't working.
Right.
It also says a lot that we need to start manufacturing some of these things here. We're too reliant.
On remember, so now let me tell you how so real that is, right? Back in the 70s, most of what happened here was made in America. We said that proudly, right? I grew up in Dayton, Ohio. And Interstate 70 and Interstate 75, huge factories. And people would work 8 hours a day. They could put food on the table. They could buy a house. They could have a car. They'd work 8 hours a day. They'd do time and a half on Saturday and double time on Sunday after church. And people ate well. Once in a while, you could take your family out to a restaurant. It happened very rarely. But you could also, you know, pay full freight for a dinner at the church after church. So all that existed, right? That was a factory. And if you didn't have an education, you could still go to the factory and work on a stamp press machine and feel good about yourself.
Right.
Today, that no longer exists. We exported all that manufacturing. All those factories are now gone. They ain't coming back. Unless we begin to reinvest, which is build back better. You got to reinvest in making things here.
Okay. All righty. Okay, so I want to move on from the current economic climate and talk about the country's political divide. And I want to bring Gene in because Gene's been patient over there. And I think this is a good time to bring Gene. Gene?
Yes, thank you, Walter. Before I get to the country's political divide, I just wanted to address Ray on his own goals when he ran for mayor. And before I ask the question, I just want to preface it with the fact that he had his chief of staff, Basil Smichel, who's a longtime friend of mine and a fraternity brother. We actually grew up in the same neighborhood in the Northeast Bronx. So I already felt some sort of an attachment to Ray before I even met him. And I had a chance to greet him in the South Bronx, the 79th Assembly District. And although I live in one of the largest EDs, as far as my Mitchell Lama co-op, which is Concord Village, I said, I want to test his mettle. I want to see what this guy's really all about. So I walked him through NYSHA houses, and I bought some leaders within the community that were, you know, had a high acumen and understanding on what the needs of the residents of NYSHA were. And Ray asked all the correct and applicable questions and received answers, and he was given results right there on the street, as well as he would meet people where they were at. And I say that in terms, we approached some brothers that were sitting around outside at the Domino's table, having some drinks and things of that nature. And Ray walked up to them and introduced himself and engaged them in conversation. And I said to myself, this is a solid gentleman right here. This is a good person right here. And I supported him for his run for mayor. Unfortunately, we didn't get the win, but to me, he was the best choice, or at least my first choice for mayor. And that's a segue into my question for you, Ray, which is a compound question. And it's simply this. What made you run for mayor of New York City and why?
First of all, thank you for your comments. Second of all, listen, I've been blessed to be in the position I've been in. And that comes through a lot of sacrifices, as we've talked about. And I come from a family of servants. So I thought that given the systemic inequities that I see across the board in healthcare, in the economy, in housing, in you name it, in each one of these areas, in education mostly, that if I could do something, if I could take the gifts that I've been given, that I've been blessed to have and fortunate to have, and have an impact on the community, first of all, the city that I love that gave me everything. You know, as I said in the campaign, I came to the city with three things. I had the best education. I was on scholarship from sixth grade to the time I finished graduate school. So I had the best education, I had a lot of debt, and I had no money. So this city gave me everything. So I said, if I can take some of this, given my lived and what they call my lived experiences, how I grew up, and apply all of that to helping out the city that I love, and especially the people who look like me, then I should take the chance to go do that. So I ran as a public servant. What I recognize is that many people are in this as self-servants. And I felt that this was something I wanted to go do to see if I couldn't help out our people. That was the soul. This wasn't about me. It never has been about me. And when I decided to leave my job, as I tell, I call my 94, now 95, just passed mother and said, I quit my job. She said, boy, you've lost your mind. What are you talking about? And I explained to her why. And, you know, my word says, when the foundation's crumbling, what would the righteous do? And so I'm not in the pulpit, but I've been blessed by the pulpit and covered by the blood. So I said, if I can do this, I'm going to go do this. And that's why I decided to go do that. That's why I ran. I ran for us, because I recognize just the situation is not bad out there. I want to be clear. It's grim. And I'm looking at third through eighth grade black and brown boys and girls, 8 out of 10 who are below proficient. That's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at $27,000 a year to educate a child in New York City in the Bronx. Parents get together at the beginning of the year to buy toilet paper and crayons. I'm looking at that $27,000 a year. Then I'm looking at $446,000 a year in a place that I just visited about two to three weeks ago called Rikers Island. $446,000, $27,000. There's a young man who'd been in there, I don't know for how long. He says, you know, the only thing I want to do is to go outside and have the sun hit my face, because I haven't seen it in 3 to 4 months. I ran because those situations, those conditions are not conditions that we should live in. That's why I ran.
Oh, well, thank you for that. I have another question. Being that the financial world, with you being a financial guru, and all throughout this interview this evening, you've used numbers and stats to prove your point. In retrospect, because this is in your wheelhouse, do you think you would have had a better opportunity running for comptroller of New York City as opposed to mayor?
You know, I did it. I did it not so that I could get an office. I did it so I could make a difference. What do you think the comptroller has done? Can you tell me one thing the comptroller has done other than audits?
That's about it, basically. And because of that, he didn't do well in the race for mayor.
That was certainly one of the reasons.
Next question: is there anything in the future for Ray Maguire when it comes to politics?
I will support those who I think are committed to doing the right thing. And I will be, I'll be an advisor. I've said to the administrations, plural, that I'll be an advisor, which I will be, but that's a different world. It is not a functioning world when it comes to us. I'm looking at what has taken place in our community for the past 10 to 15 years, and the trend line is gone down in every important area, every single one. I can't point to one. Education down.
Understood.
Education down. Economics down. Healthcare down. Down. Housing down.
Housing.
I still got open tickets in NYSHA. I go to NYSHA, look outside the bedroom, and I see a grate there that's got feces and diapers.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, understood. Now, lastly, to speak to Walter's question, what do you think of the political divide between Democrats and Republicans?
Well, I think there's a political divide with Democrats alone. We first got to talk about our own house. We've been hijacked. When's the last time you heard somebody talk about George Floyd?
Correct.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time you heard somebody talk about Black Lives Matter movement? And who's running Black Lives Matter?
Thank you.
That's for sure. Yeah.
And
somebody done hijacked our movement.
African Americans put this president in office And I haven't seen one thing come our way yet.
So, but that, I mean, look at the look at what we inherited here. Folks, don't get confused. This gold, do you know, progressive this, progressive that. We see how progressive is playing out every single day. I've been progressive all my life. And we see how this stuff is playing out every single day in our neighborhoods. Every single day. 14, 15, 16-year-old black and brown boys shooting each other. How do we value life? I'm looking at the tragedy that just happened out in Los Angeles with the godfather of Clarence Avant. Somebody walks into his house and shoots his wife in the middle of the night. Come on, y'all.
It's tragic.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Unbelievable.
And who said anything about it? Who said anything about it? I'm just going to the Bronx. Let me just go to the Bronx. Bronx still burning.
Right. Sure.
We need help. We need to help ourselves. We need to get capital in the communities, which is where this started. And we need to come together. We need to have the right leadership.
Well, okay. That's what I wanted to ask you about with your mayoral run. I used to work for the Department of Sanitation, municipal, right? Mm-hmm. And with all the police, fire, MTA, all of that money is pulled into that pension system. And a lot of that money is being invested in businesses that are not ours, but yet the municipal, the makeup of all of these agencies, a lot of black and brown workers. And none of that money is coming back to those communities where the money is coming from our paychecks. Our pension system is feeding a lot of the investments that are going on, a lot of the new businesses that are in New York City, a lot of the growth is going to a lot of other people, and yet the workers, the workforce is made up of a lot of black and brown people.
If you look at where your pension, who's managing your pension dollars, very few of those people who are managing your pension dollars look like you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Very few. And look at the leadership of these organizations. Some of the leadership looks like you, but the dollars not going to people to invest who look like you.
And they're looking for the ROI, net return on investment.
You want them to look for the ROI, but black people can generate first quartile ROI, but they're not being given the chance.
Absolutely. Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Any further questions in the chat room, Michelle?
No questions in this chat room. Nope. Our audience is just listening, and great questions, Gene.
And absorbing and sponging. That's what we're doing, sponging. I do want to turn to corporate hiring and retention of blacks. I know that wasn't included in what I sent you, but since you are my hero, you aspired and you got into a position that I dreamed of. I worked hard to get to. As a black man in corporate America, with some of the larger banks, I never got to that point, I never got an opportunity. But first question I have is that you were in a position to see the last in, first out situation, the process, meaning black people coming in, the last hired and first fired. All right. Do you see when you left? I know you left recently in the last year or two. Do you see a change in corporate America, wherein that's a dying type of process or evil, for lack of a better term?
I don't think it's an evil process at all. I think people. Let's look at their. I'm going to say numbers between $50 and $100 billion that. Corporate America pledge post George Floyd, and maybe $1 billion of that has been spent, maybe $1 billion. So I think people are well intentioned. There are I don't see the evidence of people being held accountable. There are lots of efforts for diversity, equity, inclusion. There have been efforts for that. When I started out, a lot of efforts on that. Those efforts seem to have went quiet, and now people have decided that, given the divide that's in this country, that's threatening the fabric of this country, that they want to re-engage on diversity, equity. we got to make sure that it's more substantive than what it appears to be now, and people need to be held accountable. So is there an evil? No, there is. I would say that we continue to miss. We didn't get it right. Right. So I talked to the people at the business school in my alma mater, and I say the number of black students that we have had for the past 30 years has been on average the same number. You've increased the size of the class. The number of black people has remained about the same for 30 years. That can continue.
Okay.
So in leadership positions, it has to open up. I got $2 trillion worth of capital in the span of 20 blocks. Let's call it 30 blocks, which is a mile and a half in Midtown Manhattan. And I got four, maybe five black and brown people in positions of responsibility.
It's horrible. Horrible. I know you had mentioned also, Ray, that Citigroup recruited from the best schools in the country. Did they? Those best schools, and I quote best schools, did they include HBCUs?
Yeah. Okay. Howard, Morehouse, Spelman, they need to do a better job. All of them need to do a better job. I want to be clear about this. I'm not giving any of them a pass.
Okay. All right. Now, how did you manage? And, you know, I've been in this situation many times myself, right? How do you manage being the only black guy in the room? And what advice would you give to those that are in that situation or, you know, or aspire to get into that level where they're the only black person around?
So,
person of color.
So the corporate world still manages by exception and what you know when you are in that world. There are a couple of great philosophers whom we know about. One we know about historically and one we know about more currently. Historically is one called Ralph Ellison in The Invisible Man, who says, play the game, but don't believe in it. And then there's one more recently who just passed, unfortunately, named Omar on The Wire.
Yeah.
And what Omar says is the game out there. You're the player, be played. If you understand that, you're going to be okay. And so as the only black man in the room, first I was Ray McGuire.
Right.
In the early part of my career, they couldn't quite tell who I was until I raised my hand and they thought, okay, this is a little different to the Ray McGuire we thought. So you overcome that. And then what you recognize is that this is still a world managed by exception. As a black man in a senior position, it is, and you are a proxy for every black person. So if you fail, it's I told you so. And if you succeed, you're the exception. That is not appropriate.
Yeah, that, what you said brought back a lot of memories when you mentioned the game. You know, back in 1975, I was at Bank of Boston International. And the senior vice president, he was an Irish guy, and I think he was getting ready to retire. But he did tell me, he said, look, if you can't play the game, you get up from the table, which is, that's what you do, you know, and that was unfortunate, but it is the exception. You know, you have to be twice as good, you know, when you walk in the room and I just wanted to
just acknowledge that. I never doubted that. Listen, I hit some hard times. I got to tell you this. This wasn't always easy. I mean, it's actually never been easy. I was with a very successful young black guy yesterday at lunch. And he says, when does it ever, you know, get easier? It doesn't. I don't want to make any illusion. When you're out there and you're black in a position, I didn't have the option. There was no plan B. I didn't have the option not to succeed. I stayed in my position longer than anybody in the history of Wall Street. I didn't say black. I said anybody in the history of Wall Street. It is likely that I've been more responsible for the creation of black wealth than all the other mayoral candidates combined, period. I know that to be a fact. All of them. Wealth and opportunities for jobs.
Thank you. Hey,
can I ask you a question?
Sure.
We have a lot of entertainers and athletes who are expanding their portfolios and they're becoming billionaires. Without naming anybody, because I'm not looking for that, but do any of these people reach out to you or to the Robert Smiths of the world to kind of, you know, get advice from you?
Yeah, you know, I gave Robert Smith his first job offer.
Wow.
There's a company that just went public that you all may know, a company by the name of Compass.
I don't think I heard it.
I'm not familiar.
Yes, I heard of Compass.
Mm-hmm. You see, big real estate company. The guy who was one of the largest owners.
Yes, I did.
One of the largest owners is a mentee of mine, Robert Refkin. So, yeah, there's some. If you look at the lineup of the people who in the race supported me, you'll see some familiar names.
All right.
Okay. All right, we're pushing up against the clock. Ray, do you have any words of wisdom that you can encapsulate all that we've said that you can give out to our listeners? I know that's a big ask, but I'm going to try.
We're at a moment in time where we have achieved a lot when it comes to social justice. Many of those things are being attempted to be rolled back now. Roe v. Wade, the Voting Rights Act. It's important for us to continue and to be genuine and authentic advocates for social justice. The area where it's going to be more permanent and that will create generations of permanence is wealth. We need to make certain that we continue to focus on getting capital and investing so that we can grow our wealth and so that we can have generational wealth. The focus ought to be on that and putting whatever plans in place and learning as much as we can about the money game, because the money game is ultimately that which is going to allow us to move forward. And to get into the money game, we've got to focus on education. You can't do one without the other, not legitimately, not, you know, transparently. So I would say let's focus on whatever we can do to get economic justice, because that from that, a lot of other things will flow. You got to education justice in order to get that economic justice.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you. Thank you. I will definitely take that under advisement. I'm quite sure our listeners will. You're a value and you're an asset, and you are definitely an example. And the panel, let me start with Gene.
Yes. Thank you, Walter. And again, Ray, thank you for the invitation and being on the show. A lot of the information that you have given us this evening is very valuable. And even if it just reached one person, you know, we've all done our job tonight. But right now, I'd like to shift gears and talk about something that I know is near and dear to your heart and it's going to make you smile. And I'm talking about your children, most notably your boys that play basketball. You could begin with Cole Anthony and work your way on down. I'm listening.
So, well, listen, we are so blessed and so fortunate to have three children whom we love dearly. I have a better three-quarters wife who is a film producer, documentary film producer. She'd written three books and done a whole host of other things. So I married up, and I'm quite happy about that. We have three children, Cole, Ella, and Leo. Cole is, through a whole bunch of hard work and sacrifice, is the starting point guard for the Orlando Magic. So we're fortunate to see him. He's going to play a little bit later tonight. And that's Cole. Ella is our daughter. And through, again, a lot of hard work and sacrifice, she just about to finish her first semester as a freshman at Harvard. So we're quite pleased about that. And Leo, and she's also a baller. And Leo, who is our 9-year-old third grader, is also a baller. And so, you know, we have a family that has truly been blessed. I couldn't be more excited about our family. And if there's anything for what this journey is about, it's making certain that our families are well taken care of or protected and have a value system that's an unassailable value system, which is what we try to teach our children.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Thank you. Chris?
I just want to say it's been a pleasure listening. And just being able to ask you some questions. And hopefully, you know, I shared this with as many people as I could, because people need to know who you are. Far too many don't. And, you know, we need to see ourselves in these positions. And I'm really appreciative of your time. Thank you.
All right. Michelle?
Yes, thank you, Mr. McGuire. I really appreciate all of the information that you shared. As a small business owner, I definitely learned a lot from you today, and a fellow city banker as well. Thank you. And we must get your family on the show. They're following your footsteps. So
y'all want my wife. That's who y'all want, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Y'all want my wife.
I want your wife.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure.
Yes, yes.
So thank you for your kind words. Our listeners definitely learned a lot from you today. Thank you.
Yeah, I do want to say to everyone, but the regulars know, but we will be doing a rebroadcast on Sunday after 3 p.m. And this podcast will be pushed out to all the platforms where you get your podcast. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, you name it. Wherever you get your podcast, you will be able to find the Walt Weekly Podcast.
That's right.
And you will get a replay on Sunday after 3. After 3 p.m.
After 3 p.m. And don't forget to join us next week. We have Joseph Coelho. He's a community activist and president and CEO of Bookman Construction, building construction in New York City. So make sure you join us next week at 6 p.m.
Will he be able to tell us how to get a contract, Michelle?
I'm hoping so. Definitely.
All right. We're going to stay tuned.
Stay tuned, everyone. Everyone be safe and have a great and awesome weekend. Thank you again, Ray, Gene, and Chris.
Thank y'all for having me, okay? Appreciate y'all. Walt, get some good music, okay?
Michelle, I will.
I got that covered.
Michelle, help a brother out, okay? Help him out, okay?
Okay. Talk soon. Take care, everybody.
Y'all take care.
All right. Have a good weekend. Thank you.